Before we begin our worship part of the worship service, I would like to introduce our worship leader this morning, Jim Scott. We are very privileged to have Jim with us this morning. Jim is an active Unitarian Universalist, and his website says he's appeared in as a service leader and doing workshops and conferences in over 300 Unitarian Universalist churches, probably around the world. Is that all? 500, it's an old website, a little over 500 churches. It says 300, so 500. We're very privileged to have him with us this morning, and I know that you will enjoy and take a lot away from this morning's service. Jim was one of the initial developers of the Green Sanctuary movement. As you know, our church is a participant in Green Sanctuary. He's written many of the hymns in the hymnal, including my favorite, Gather the Spirit. I've been a member of this church for about 20 years, and so I've sung that hymn hundreds of times and looking forward to singing it again this morning. Jim is a composer and publisher of music. He has a new songbook? A songbook out, which was developed in conjunction with a grant from the Seventh Principle Project and the Fund for Unitarian Universalism.
The Inside of the Earth, someone told me, I believe it was on NPR, is virtually as hot as the sun. Now, if it's that hot on the inside, where are the flames on the outside? Well, we must be them. We are that energy force of Earth, burning, oxidizing, green and blue and white if you see us from out in space. Down here on the ground, we're fashioning from the Earth a whole spectrum of color, providing this mysterious and mystical balance of peace and health and justice that we might call spirit. And I like this word spirit, as you'll see. We are gathered again in that dangerous bastion, the church that threatens family values. The church that wants to undermine the authority of the Father. The church that has half forgotten the Creator in its pagan worshiping of the creation. The church that those right-wing radio ministries have warned us about. This church of bleeding heart liberalism, some thinly veiled front for leftist politics, of homosexual propaganda. I like it here. The church that tells you you won't be going to hell no matter what you do in this life. The church that often leaves the first few pews open for the diversity we're sure is going to show up. We're open to it. The church of practicing witches, whose very assertion they don't believe in any devil, confirms they must be accomplishing some of his work. And the church that sings carefully, not sure if there are any words we can totally subscribe to and not be questioning ourselves tomorrow or in the next worship committee meeting. The church that is not sure if there is, in fact, anything that we can celebrate with that passion and abandon we see those other churches hold for Jesus the Savior, Son of God the Father. Although something lurks in us, we might be missing out on some of their fun. It is that search for ecstasy, enlightenment, and other things, including free coffee, which is often the only thing whose origins we don't question, that brings us together. This is my church, and I'm a zealot. This is the church that says to everyone, you're not only welcome, but we need you and your creative input in our continuing, dynamic, and evolving culture. Diversity is a strength, a survival mechanism we believe in. We face the challenge of weighing new and ancient wisdom in our search for guidance in this life, as well as the continuing creation of our own mythology. It's not an easy job. And we come together in meetings like this to offer each other ourselves for sustenance. We gather to seek to find and to share the promise of honest religion
to come alive, to see truth, and to heal our world.
And so it is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. A place for questions more profound than answers. Vulnerability more powerful than strength.
And peace that can pass all understanding.
It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. On the day after what we now call the attack on America, or know by its cryptic numerals 9/11, my garden yielded up corn and beans, cucumbers, eggplant. Persistent and unjudgmental as the sun that follows a storm, this orchard and garden is often my asylum, and I find rooting in the soil to be fitting response in troubled times. Blanketed by winter snows, it still makes a soothing labyrinth for a meditative walk. Now, seasons of bloom and fruit have come and gone again, while the perpetrator, long since identified, still haunts our collective soul. Immersed in this lush and healing context, I find myself imagining the conversation I might have with Osama bin Laden. I picture he could be a farmer, a rich one, if given the chance. He'd probably see my abundance as the spoils of evil powers. Or maybe I'd just be a peasant in the eyes of such an extraordinarily rich man turned international criminal. I dream, though, we could talk about injustice and struggle for equality in this sanctuary I've fashioned by my own hands. As the dog runs circles in her yard nearby, I would speak for nonviolence. He would have to educate me as to the oppression of his people and no doubt make the case for revolution. Now, some may take offense at my attempt to even humanize this monster. The most disturbing part to reconcile, I think, is that he at least sees himself as a deeply religious man. I offer no defense for his actions, but world leaders have long sent young people into battle to kill, convinced of their justification. And some previously obscure Muslim cult certainly holds no monopoly on vengeance as policy. Perhaps it is not to the hardened criminal blinded by hate that I speak. I imagine listening to the anger and the accusations of all those people he claims to represent here in my tranquil garden. Among apple, peach, and cherry trees, there would be enough beauty and serenity all about us to keep us engaged. In the company of swelling pumpkins or savoring a fresh tomato, we might talk of the horrors of war. Amid roses and fragrant herbs, we might consider what he could possibly hope to accomplish for his people through such violence. There is, I suppose, no real place for negotiation with the perpetrators of such crimes. Mr. bin Laden, or whoever it is like him, would argue there is no negotiating with the evil U.S. and the corrupt Western powers. Under the grape arbor, we might argue and disagree and yet still continue. I'm afraid, though, there may not be enough magic here, enough aura of harmony to keep our arguments constructive. It is not a large enough sanctuary to hold our dialogue in its energy field. One could easily run off in a fit of anger across the road, past the picket fence fortresses of the middle class, out to the highway in the city, where bastions of excess and consumption are monuments to a society dangerously out of balance with itself and the earth. It will take a bigger garden, a larger and more inclusive sanctuary, where time is suspended for depth of reflection. I pray for that garden of all the earth, where all are included. Between the quiet where one might speak and be heard, and the sustenance of food, fresh air, and natural systems busy in their harmony of symphonic proportions, only then might our dialogue really take root. Some years ago, more than a couple of decades ago, I got to be part of making a big piece of music that's called the Missa Gaia Earth Mass. Paul Winter had read this book by James Lovelock, Mr. Lovelock's Gaia Hypothesis. He posed it as a hypothesis. I think most of us would take it as more than that, is that the Earth is one living being, one living organism, one little body of life here in space. And we're all a part of that. It was not long after that book came out that the Unitarian Universalist Association at one of our general assemblies democratically voted to adopt our seventh principle of the interdependent web of all life, another way of saying the same thing, that Mr. Lovelock took the Greek goddess Gaia, who is kind of like Mother Earth, although she has her vengeful side as well in the mythology. And he used the Greek goddess Gaia to personify for us this idea that the Earth is one living thing. I like that idea. We made a big piece of music with the Winter Consort, and I've been playing it often over the years with a variety of groups. It's one of the things I get to do, to go around and be a guest and, you know, do the Missa Gaia Earth Mass with people. So the theology, maybe that's it, has sunk in on me. It snuck up on me that I'm now this guy who sings about the Earth as really, it's the thing, the prime thing that I do, singing about Earth and ecology and peace on Earth and justice and other kinds of things like that is what I make my songs out of. It's what gets me up in the morning. It really is what I have to talk about and sing about that I feel some urgency about, as a matter of fact. So I have to say, I never really got it about the bearded old man in the sky. I started at the Universalist Church of Norwell, Massachusetts, where we did use God and Jesus a good deal more in that Universalist setting. But I recall my dad saying to me, Universalists don't believe that a loving God, if there is one, would sentence us to a hell. So what I joked about in the beginning, you won't be going to hell no matter what you do in this life. It's true. It's a fundamental principle of universalism that we don't believe in, that a loving God would, whatever you think of that great spirit, great mystery thing, that we wouldn't be sentenced to a hell like that. And I also said something referring to that we kind of make it up as we go along, which is not really a joke. We do. With all the highest intent and responsibility we can put to it, we don't have a book up here with all the answers. We do make up our liturgy, our theology, the song and the story, the mythology that will heal us. That's our job. That's what we do. And I get my stories and my songs from all of you and the work that I see as I visit churches and do my sociological study on the denomination. I never got it about the bearded old man in the sky, but I do get it about this very round woman in the sky. And we are made in her image, if you will. A little less spherical, perhaps, but we have all the attributes that our Mother Earth modeled for us long before living, what we call living and what we recognize as DNA and all of that sort of thing, came along. Now, there are cultures who would view this as living, the rock people and the mountain people, that living things are, after all, not solid at all, but a dance of very tiny little particles and all of that. And we've kind of proven that out now that we've got electron microscopes and stuff. And now that we know enough about DNA to understand we're related to broccoli, that we understand we've got the proof, we got the scientific basis for this interdependent web of all life. I kind of think we could use another principle maybe that says we believe in evolution, or we believe in the scientific process. The free search for faith and the search for truth and those almost cover that. But I wonder if we might even stand up and say that. Darwin's birthday came by just recently. You probably got as much as I got about the people screaming and yelling about horrors, Darwinism. Oh, and that theme park. I have to go there sometime up there in North Texas. That says we've only been around for 10,000 years, and the people and the dinosaurs were all there together. All that. That's amazing, isn't it? that could go on in the face of just irrefutable evidence that's overwhelming. That we are related to everything, and we're constantly changing places with the earth. As the tree said, I'm always changing places with the earth. We are made of this mother of ours, and we are constantly going back to her. I got some of this, some of the idea that moves me, I guess, from Mr. Lovelock's book, and I highly recommend it. Several books that he has now. But to say it really quickly, Mother Earth modeled all this stuff for us, the circulatory system, the water cycle. The Earth had a circulatory system long before we came along. The Earth had a digestive system of organic decomposition and things with life, DNA, growing. It's based on memory, when cells remembered how to duplicate and all. That's what it's about, this memory of things. We are evolved out of that memory, out of those rhythms, those harmonies of the earth. The earth warming up 12 hours and cooling off 12 hours in each of 365 and a quarter times around the earth, leaning toward the sun and away from the sun. We are evolved from that rhythm, from that song. The song of, and I suppose if you want to go far enough to get into astrology, we're evolved out of the stars way out there are somehow affecting us as well. But certainly the moon is, and the seasons are, and we are in debt to that. I wanted to try to figure out how to tie this into the fundraising appeal that I heard before, but humanity has a debt to the earth, after all. We have an oxygen debt on this continent to Latin America and South America and to the oceans. We consume more oxygen here than North America makes. So it's a good thing we got big oceans on each side and some other stuff. We, in our consumption of the stuff we think we deserve and we are privileged, entitled to, in our consumption of all that, we've created a situation where water is not available to a great part of this earth. Something like 2 million people are out looking for water now, and 1 million will find it. 1 billion will find it. It's women's work furthering the inequity of it all to carry water in a lot of cultures in this world. We're so privileged and so much beneficiaries of this great abundance, of this great gift of the earth, and unconscious of it, that we seem to have an addict's idea of privilege. That's not the word I wanted. I just said it before. What's that word? The addict feels entitlement to all of that. And the big blind spot we have when we practice nonviolence and be friends to everyone and think multiculturally and all that, the big blind spot is the theft. The theft that we live on. That's what armies are for, to defend that theft, to keep us in the privilege. And then we occasionally wake up to terrorism or something, that the theft from the people of less power, of no voice, of no privilege, of no education, in fact, or no health care, or no land ownership. Those people who we figure are set up to not talk back to us. I read a beautiful book. I'll recommend another book. Uwen Akpen is a Jesuit priest from, now I've forgotten what African country. I think it's Kenya. He wrote a beautiful book called Say You're One of Them. meaning if you say you're one of them, you know, that could be a life and death thing. He was on the radio. I heard him interviewed. He has a beautiful melodic voice, too. And he says, suppose somebody robbed the house next door. They cleaned out the house next door. They clean it out completely. They bring it all over to your house. Now it's all in your living room. You give it back? Oh, of course you give it back. That would be, you know, to be complicit with theft. Oh, no, we wouldn't keep it. Oh, no, we would. He said, why then don't you give back what you have stolen from Africa? Well, there it is. We could name a few more continents. We are beneficiaries of that great benevolence of the earth, and we are beneficiaries of this great theft. And you know, I know that I'm rich enough and you're rich enough to part with a bunch of money. Now that we've traded our wealth for money, we have it, and we're under this illusion that money will procreate. That's the big mistake we've made, that we thought we bought security by thinking that we could put money in a box and it would have babies. Value, added value, only comes from the earth or someone else's work. If you got some of that, you know, I'll bet... I've seen it done, and I'm only here visiting one day. I've seen it done that Martin Luther King Day, I walked to a church, an all-African-American church, because I the one week I happened to not be working. I took my daughter to, and had just a beautiful time. You know, it was 2 days before Obama is getting inaugurated, too. So what a day it was in this church. The way they take the offering, everyone stands up, and there's the gospel choir is singing, and they all process up to the front to put their money in the box under the watchful eye of some of the deacons of the church. That's an interesting idea. You know, I'll bet there's someone, maybe there's probably 20, that could write a check for $1,000 and not, you know, and forget it immediately. You need a new transmission. You got to bail your son out of jail because of the fraternity party, whatever it is. And you part with that $1,000 and you go right on. There's probably some that can part with $500. And, you know, and most of us can probably part with $100. And that's all I'm going to say about that. As we celebrate today our life support system, this Mother Earth, we'll take this time to celebrate this more immediate life support system. And this will also be our last song, let me say. But we will also take the offering. So I know I caught you off guard. She was waiting before, and then I sedated them back there because I kept talking. The words to this refrain are in your order of service. My wish for you, as now we part, is for greater peace to fill your heart with dreams as vast as starry space. So hurt and anger know no place. May truth be shared and wounds be healed, and joy for living be revealed. Through every fate and circumstance, may hope lead weary steps to dance. And may your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. May fears be turned with keen insight to wisdom for what's just and right. Where sorrow grows, compassion strong, and pains will pass before too long. May the bounds of our diversity serve a richer harmony. May courage hold your heart so true to smile on love when it smiles on you. And may your life be as a song resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. I'll sing a line, you sing it back, and may your life be as a song. You sing it, and may your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light. Resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light. Then softly serenade the stars. Then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. Ever dancing circles in the night. Now this turns out to be a four-part round. Ha ha ha. But I know we can do it in at least two parts if you'll self-select. You know who you are. If you can do the second part, I'll show you where it starts. And if you're unsure, stick with me. And then again, if you're more adventurous or lost, be part three or part four. And may your life be as a song resounding. And may your life be to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. Ever dancing circles in the night. Ever dancing circles in the night. When Wisdom was a striking young man, he met a beautiful woman named Love. And now, I'm not really sure who was the man and who was the woman. Maybe they were the same sex. I'd like to keep you, said Wisdom. You can't own me, said Love, but I love you anyway. What would it cost to know you'd always be there, asked Wisdom. Don't ask such questions, said Love. Just look at the stars. Why? Wisdom pondered. Are they telling us something? Oh, chill out, chided Love, which made Wisdom happy in a funny sort of way. And so it was that Wisdom fell in love with Love and thus became truly wise. Let's go in peace.